Ladies and gentlemen, good morning. It is terrific Tuesday, December 18th, 2012. It is a great day to be, as Denise from San Diego always says, alive, awake, aware, enthusiastic on this beautiful morning, enjoying this miraculous gift that each of us have been given on this day called life. Thank you. Thank you for being awake. Thank you for being aware. Thank you for dialing in to the Think and Grow Rich call, where we gather together as entrepreneurs all over the world and come together Monday through Friday to start our day on a positive note, to start our day with our heads and our minds in some material that can magnetize our minds for the attraction of wealth. We seek principles, we seek understanding, we seek enlightenment so that we can develop a better mindset, develop the mindset of an unstoppable entrepreneur, an entrepreneur who knows what he or she wants exactly, who has that major definite purpose, and an entrepreneur who, once we have that major definite purpose and know exactly what we want, then we move forward and we cultivate a desire for that which we want. We develop a plan. We take action on a daily basis. We encourage each other every day to get out there in the marketplace and take action. And the other thing we do as entrepreneurs following the Think and Grow Rich philosophy is we plow through temporary setback, as we know that the road to greatness is paved with temporary setbacks, little pebbles, little obstacles in the road that we need to plow through as we pick up more and more lessons along the way, discovering our inner greatness, discovering our, you know, developing that metal that we have within our, with inside ourselves. That's what we do on this call. We're followers of the Think and Grow Rich philosophy. So I salute you. I'm honored to stand in your midst. There's not a group of entrepreneurs or a group of people that I'd rather be in. You know, I love being around people who are positive or looking forward into the future and who are taking action on a daily basis and encouraging each other to do good things in the world. And that's us. That's what we do every single day. So thank you for being who you are. Thank you for being here with us. We're going to jump right into the content today. We're finishing out chapter 3 of the book Think and Grow Rich. And I'm going to jump right into it today. Dr. Napoleon Hill says, because of the need for faith and cooperation in operating business and industry, it will be both interesting and profitable to analyze an event which provides an excellent understanding of the method by which industrialists and businessmen accumulate great fortunes by giving before they try to get. The event chosen for this illustration dates back to 1900, when the United States Steel Corporation was being formed. As you read the story, keep in mind these fundamental facts and you will understand how ideas have been converted into huge fortunes. First, the United States Steel Corporation was born in the mind of Charles M. Schwab in the form of an idea he created through his imagination. Second, he mixed faith with his idea. Third, he formulated a plan for the transformation of his idea into physical and financial reality. Fourth, he put his plan into action with his famous speech at the University Club. Fifth, he applied and followed through on his plan with persistence and backed it with a firm decision until it had been fully carried out. Sixth, he prepared the way for success by a burning desire for success. If you are one of those who have often wondered how great fortunes are accumulated, this story of the creation of the United States Steel Corporation will be enlightening. If you have any doubt that men can think and grow rich, this story should dispel that doubt, because you can plainly see in the story of the United States Steel the application of a major portion of the 13 principles described in this book. This astounding description of the power of an idea was dramatically told by John Lowell in the New York World Telegram, with whose courtesy it is here reprinted. A pretty after-dinner speech for $1 billion. when on the evening of December 12, 1900, some 80 of the nation's financial nobility gathered in the banquet hall of the University Club on Fifth Avenue to do honor to a young man from out of the West, not half a dozen of the guests realized that they were to witness the most significant episode in American industrial history. J. Edward Simmons and Charles Stuart Smith, their hearts full of gratitude for the lavish hospitality bestowed on them by Charles M. Schwab during a recent visit to Pittsburgh, had arranged a dinner to introduce the 38-year-old steel man to Eastern Banking Society. But they didn't expect him to stampede the convention. They warned him, in fact, that the bosoms within New York stuffed shirts would not be responsive to oratory, and that if he didn't want to bore the Stillmans and the Harrimans and the Vanderbilts, he had better limit himself to 15 or 20 minutes of polite vaporings and let it go at that. Even John Pierpont Morgan, sitting on the right hand of Schwab, as became his imperial dignity, intended to grace the banquet table with his presence only briefly. And so far as the press and public were concerned, the whole affair was of so little moment that no mention of it found its way into print the next day. So the two hosts and their distinguished guests ate their way through the usual seven or eight courses. There was little conversation, and what there was of it was restrained. Few of the bankers and brokers had met Schwab, whose career had flowered along the banks of the Monongahela, and none knew him well. But before the evening was over, they and with them Money Master Morgan were to be swept off their feet, and a billion-dollar baby, the United States Steel Corporation, was to be conceived. It is perhaps unfortunate for the sake of history that no record of Charlie Schwab's speech at the dinner was ever made. He repeated some parts of it at a later date during a similar meeting of Chicago bankers, and still later when the government brought suit to dissolve the Steel Trust, he gave his own version from the witness stand of the remarks that stimulated Morgan into a frenzy of financial activity. It is probable, however, that it was a homely speech, somewhat ungrammatical, for the niceties of language never bothered Schwab, full of epigram and threaded with wit. But aside from that, it had a galvanic force and effect upon 5 billions of estimated capital that was represented by the diners. After it was over and the gathering was still under its spell, although Schwab had talked for 90 minutes, Morgan led the orator to a recessed window where, dangling their legs from the high, uncomfortable seat, they talked for an hour more. The magic of the Schwab personality had been turned on, full force. But what was more important and lasting was the full-fledged, clear-cut program he laid down for the aggrandizement of steel. Many other men had tried to interest Morgan in slapping together a steel trust after the pattern of the biscuit, wire, hoop, sugar, rubber, whiskey, oil, or chewing gum combinations. John W. Gates, the gambler, had urged it, but Morgan distrusted him. The Moore boys, Bill and Jim, Chicago stock jobbers who had glued together a match trust in a cracker corporation, had urged it and failed. Elbert H. Gary, the sanctimonious country lawyer, wanted to foster it, but he wasn't big enough to be impressive, until Schwab's eloquence took J.P. Morgan to the heights from which he could visualize the solid results from the most daring financial undertaking ever conceived. The project was regarded as a delirious dream of easy money crackpots. The financial magnetism that began a generation ago to attract thousands of small and sometimes inefficiently managed companies into large and competition-crushing combinations had become operative in the steel world through the devices of that jovial business pirate, John W. Gates. Gates already had formed the American Steel and Wire Company out of a chain of small concerns, and together with Morgan had created the Federal Steel Company. The National Tube and American Bridge Companies were two more Morgan concerns, and the Moore brothers had forsaken the match and cookie business to form the American Group, Tin Plate, Steel Hoop, Sheet Steel, and the National Steel Company. But by the side of Andrew Carnegie's gigantic vertical trust, a trust owned and operated by 53 partners, those other combinations were picayune. They might combine to their heart's content, but the whole lot of them couldn't make a dent in the Carnegie organization, and Morgan knew it. The eccentric old Scott knew it too. From the magnificent heights of Skibo Castle, he had viewed, first with amusement and then with resentment, the attempts of Morgan's smaller companies to cut into his business. When the attempts became too bold, Carnegie's temper was translated into anger and retaliation. He decided to duplicate every mill owned by his rivals. Hitherto, he hadn't been interested in wire, pipe, hoops, or sheet. Instead, he was content to sell such companies the raw steel and let them work it into whatever shape they wanted. Now, with Schwab as his chief and able lieutenant, he planned to drive his enemies to the wall. So it was that in the speech of Charles M. Schwab, Morgan saw the answer to his problem of combination. A trust without Carnegie, giant of them all, would be no trust at all. A plum pudding, as one writer said, without the plums. Schwab's speech on the night of December 12, 1900, undoubtedly carried the inference, though not the pledge, that the vast Carnegie enterprise could be brought under the Morgan tent. He talked of the world future for steel, of reorganization for efficiency, of specialization, of the scrapping of unsuccessful mills and concentration of effort on the flourishing properties of economies in the ore traffic, of economies in overhead and administrative departments, of capturing foreign markets. More than that, he told the buccaneers among them wherein lay the errors of their customary piracy. Their purposes, he inferred, had been to create monopolies, raise prices, and pay themselves fat dividends out of privilege. Schwab condemned the system in his heartiest manner. The short-sightedness of such a policy, he told his hearers, lay in the fact that it restricted the market in an era when everything cried for expansion. By cheapening the cost of steel, he argued, an ever-expanding market would be created, more uses for steel would be devised, and a goodly portion of the world trade could be captured. Actually, though he did not know it, Schwab was an apostle of modern mass production. So the dinner at the University Club came to an end. Morgan went home to think about Schwab's rosy predictions. Schwab went back to Pittsburgh to run the steel business for Wee Andrew Carnegie, while Gary and the rest went back to their stock tickers to fiddle around in anticipation of the next move. It was not long coming. It took Morgan about 1 week to digest the feast of reason Schwab had placed before him. When he had assured himself that no financial indigestion was to result, he sent for Schwab and found that young man rather coy. Mr. Carnegie, Schwab indicated, might not like it if he found his trusted company president had been flirting with the Emperor of Wall Street, the street upon which Carnegie was resolved never to tread. Then it was suggested by John W. Gates, the go-between, that if Schwab happened to be in the Bellevue Hotel in Philadelphia, J.P. Morgan might also happen to be there. When Schwab arrived, however, Morgan was inconveniently ill at his home in New York, and so on the elder man's pressing invitation, Schwab went to New York and presented himself at the door of the financier's library. Now, certain economic historians have professed the belief that from the beginning to the end of the drama, the stage was set by Andrew Carnegie, that the dinner to Schwab, the famous speech, the Sunday night conference between Schwab and the Money King, were events arranged by the canny Scott. The truth is exactly the opposite. When Schwab was called in to consummate the deal, he didn't even know whether the little boss, as Andrew was called, would so much as listen to an offer to sell, particularly to a group of men whom Andrew regarded as being endowed with something less than holiness. But Schwab did take the conference with him, in his own handwriting, six sheets of copper plate figures representing to his mind the physical worth and the potential earning capacity of every steel company he regarded as an essential star in the new metal firmament. Four men pondered over these figures all night. The chief, of course, was Morgan, steadfast in his belief in the divine right of money. With him was his aristocratic partner, Robert Bacon, a scholar and a gentleman. The third was John W. Gates, whom Morgan scorned as a gambler and used as a tool. The fourth was Schwab, who knew more about the processes of making and selling steel than any group of men then living. Throughout that conference, the Pittsburgher's figures were never questioned. If he said a company was worth so much, then it was worth that much and no more. He was insistent, too, upon including in the combination only those concerns he nominated. He had conceived a corporation in which there would be no duplication, not even to satisfy the greed of friends who wanted to unload their companies upon the broad Morgan shoulders. Thus, he left out, by design, a number of the larger concerns upon which the walruses and carpenters of Wall Street had cast hungry eyes. When dawn came, Morgan rose and straightened his back. Only one question remained. "Do you think you can persuade Andrew Carnegie to sell?" he asked. "I can try," said Schwab. "If you can get him to sell, I will undertake the matter," said Morgan. "So far, so good. But would Carnegie sell? How much would he demand?" Schwab thought about $320 million. What would he take payment in? Common or preferred stocks? Bonds? Cash? Nobody could raise a third of $1 billion in cash. There was a golf game in January on the frost-cracking heath of the St. Andrews Links in Westchester, with Andrew bundled up in sweaters against the cold and Charlie talking volubly as usual to keep his spirits up, but no word of business was mentioned until the pair sat down in the cozy warmth of the Carnegie Cottage hard by. Then, with the same persuasiveness that had hypnotized 80 millionaires at the University Club, Schwab poured out the glittering promises of retirement and comfort, of untold millions to satisfy the old man's social caprices. Carnegie capitulated, wrote a figure on a slip of paper, handed it to Schwab, and said, "All right, that's what we'll sell for." The figure was approximately $400 million and was reached by taking the $320 million mentioned by Schwab as a basic figure and adding to it $80 million to represent the increased capital value over the previous 2 years. Later, on the deck of a transatlantic liner, the Scotsman said ruefully to Morgan, "I wish I had asked you for $100 million more." "If you had asked for it, you'd have gotten it," Morgan told him cheerfully. There was an uproar, of course. A British correspondent cabled that the foreign steel world was appalled by the gigantic combination. President Hadley of Yale declared that unless trusts were regulated, the country might expect an emperor in Washington within the next 25 years. But that able stock manipulator, Keene, went at his work of shoving the new stock at the public so vigorously that all the excess water, estimated by some at nearly $600 million, was absorbed in a twinkling. So Carnegie had his millions, and the Morgan Syndicate had $62 million for all its trouble, and the boys, from Gates to Gary, had their millions. The 38-year-old Schwab had his reward. He was made president of the new corporation and remained in control until 1930. The dramatic story of big business, which you have just finished, was included in this book because it is a perfect illustration of the method by which desire can be transmuted into its physical equivalent. I imagine some readers will question the statement that a mere intangible desire can be converted into its physical equivalent. Doubtless, some will say, you cannot convert nothing into something. The answer is in the story of United States Steel. That giant organization was created in the mind of one man. The plan by which the organization was provided with the steel mills that gave it financial stability was created in the mind of the same man. His faith, his desire, his imagination, his persistence were the real ingredients that went into United States Steel. The steel mills and mechanical equipment acquired by the corporation after it had been brought into legal existence were incidental, but careful analysis will disclose the fact that the appraised value of the properties acquired by the corporation increased in value by an estimated $600 million by the mere transaction which consolidated them under one management. In other words, Charles M. Schwab's idea plus the faith with which he conveyed it to the minds of J.P. Morgan and the others was marketed for a profit of approximately $600 million. Not an insignificant sum for a single idea. What happened to some of the men who took their share of the millions of dollars of profit made by this transaction is a matter with which we are not now concerned. The important feature of the astounding achievement is that it serves as unquestionable evidence of the soundness of the philosophy described in this book. Because this philosophy was the warp and the woof of the entire transaction. Moreover, the practicability of the philosophy has been established by the fact that the United States Steel Corporation prospered and became one of the richest and most powerful corporations in America, employing thousands of people, developing new uses for steel, and opening new markets, thus proving that the $600 million in profit which the Schwab idea produced was earned. Riches begin in the form of thought. The amount is limited only by the person in whose mind the thought is put into motion. Faith removes limitations. Remember this when you are ready to bargain with life for whatever it is that you ask as your price for having passed this way. Remember also that the man who created the United States Steel Corporation was practically unknown at the time. He was merely Andrew Carnegie's Man Friday until he gave birth to his famous idea. After that, he quickly rose to a position of power, fame, and riches. In the closing two lines of chapter 3, there are no limitations to the mind except those we acknowledge. Both poverty and riches are the offspring of thought. So quite a fascinating story there, my friends. I'm going to go ahead and open up the lines and we'll jump right into the mastermind portion of the call. One moment. Star
Good morning, Paul.
Hey, good morning, Melvin.
Hey, there was a lot there and it was quite a story. I just wanted to say that what I've gotten out of that was the power of the word. And we oftentimes say, you know, first there was the word. And that's very true, the power of the word. We need to think about what we're going to say before we say it. Each and every single one of us have such a power within ourselves. And so to get that thought together, to get it correctly, to get it right, and to put it out there, you are helping to manifest and create something. And that's almost with everything we say. So think about what you're going to say before you say it, and then speak up where people can hear you. I often hear times people speak, and it's like, I don't know if they're trying to be cute or whatever the case might be, but speak up. I mean, the point is to get your idea across to someone. So speak up where they can hear you. Come from the heart. And let it flow. Let it flow. And the last thing I'll say to that is to believe in what you're saying and say it with feeling. Every one of us has that power to create and to come up with these different ideas and to make things happen. That's one of the things that we should be working at improving on every single day. And one other thing I got out of there was look for ways to give more and not just what you're going to get. And with that, back to you, Paul.
Melvin, those are some great insights. I actually never really thought about the power of words in relation to this story, but boy, it really is incredibly applicable because that's exactly what Charlie Schwab used. He used words. In his speech to the bankers, he used words with Andrew Carnegie. And you reminded me of a quote that I want to share with everyone. I posted this in a Facebook group the other day. Rudyard Kipling, he said, "I am by calling a dealer in words." And words are, of course, the most powerful drug used by mankind. Thought that was great and relevant to this concept of the power of words. Thank you, Melvin. Appreciate those thoughts.
Hey, Paul.
Yes.
Paul?
Yeah, go ahead.
Let me finish up real quick. Since you mentioned Kipling, everyone must get if. They've got to get if. You've never, on one sheet of paper, you've never seen such words put together with such power is the poem If. Back to you, Paul.
Thank you. Thank you. Was that Ridge?
Yes, it was, sir.
Hey, good morning, Ridge.
Good morning. I just wanted to relate a quick story of these past few days. You know, all of this has been having a deep desire in your heart and having it manifest into reality. And when I was thinking back when I was a little boy, I wanted a motorcycle so bad. And my parents said I wouldn't shut up about it. In fact, it got to the point where at night I'd have a dream of riding my motorcycle. And one morning I remember in particular, I ran out into the garage because I wanted to go ride my bike, my motorcycle. When I got out there, there was no motorcycle. I really thought someone had stolen it. I didn't have one. But my burning desire made me believe that I had one in the garage. And, of course, a couple of years later, I actually got one. So, but it was so powerful that I really thought someone had stolen my motorcycle.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, they say the subconscious mind can't tell the difference between a real and an imagined experience, and what a great illustration of that power of desire.
It's amazing. And I wanted to thank you for the call.
Oh, thank you, Ridge. My pleasure. Thank you for being here. Appreciate you. Star
good
6
morning,
and the, hey,
hey Paul,
morning.
This is Steven.
If you've spoken, let me just remind everyone, once you've spoken, please star 6 and mute your line back out so we can keep the lines clean. And I think I heard Mark. Was that Mark first?
Yes. Yeah, it's Mark from Maine.
Hey, good morning, Mark. So good to hear your voice, man.
Hey, so good to hear yours. I'm glad you're feeling better. And I just got it this morning. We read this story. And what happened here actually is, the way I see it is, he went, Charles Schwab went from the competitive to the creative plane. He, what massive amount of money he came up with, it wasn't his own money. He didn't work for it. In essence, he did, but. As Melvin mentioned earlier, and the power of the word, he took his idea, put feet to it, and went from the competitive, because it didn't matter how many steel companies are out there already, they were going to buy them up. They were going to make this huge conglomerate. But he went from the competitive plane to the creative. And something Mel had mentioned yesterday about not worrying, but we can be concerned. When we can go from worry to concern, because when we're concerned, then we take that and look for ways to solve the problem. And that's when we go from the competitive, because once we're in the competitive, we worry about, somebody's going to get more people in their business than me, or this guy's going to make more money than me. But when we go from that worry to concern, we've stepped over from the competitive plane to the creative. And that's what I see here this morning, that Charles Schwab, he stepped over the line. He went from the competitive to the creative, and what massive amount of money. $600 million. I mean, to me, that is just mind-blowing. That amount of money to just come from a thought and an idea that somebody took the effort, he had the proper mindset, He developed a skill set with his words. He spoke. He took his what he had and he spoke. Yeah, I would have loved to have heard that speech. Because sometimes it's not the most eloquent speeches that stirs the hearts of men, but it's what comes from the heart, as Melvin said. It's Schwab had this idea, and he projected that idea, and he brought it from the heart and not from the head. And when we can step over that line from the competitive plane to the creative plane, that's when things are just going to happen. And that's what I got from the story this morning. This is great. It's amazing how many times you can read a story and get something out of it, because each time we can't comprehend it all at once. So the more times we go over it, there's more that we can glean from it. And when we're seeking the truth, that will happen. We can step over the line from the competitive plane to the creative plane, and that's when things are really going to happen. So I'm fired up. This story really pumped me up this morning. So back to you, Paul.
Mark, thank you for that insight. Another great insight that I've never, ever picked up before on that story, but you're absolutely right. He went from the competitive plane to the creative plane and started asking, how can we develop a win-win-win for all parties involved? Brilliant. Appreciate that. Steven, go ahead.
Good morning, Paul.
Good morning.
And good morning to my Think and Grow Rich family. I apologize if my thoughts don't make any sense this morning. I'm running on 2 hours of sleep, but, you know, that's dedication in my eyes. But basically what I got from this story is it's not about what you know, it's who you know. And, you know, as Mark had mentioned, you know, he took an idea and he spoke it into existence. He took massive action and, you know, he wasn't necessarily worried about how he was going to come up with the money to acquire all the steel companies and what have you. He was concerned in regards to how is it going to benefit all parties involved in the transactions, which goes back to the you know, the chapters previous when Napoleon Hill talks about not doing transactions if it doesn't benefit all parties. And that's exactly what Schwab did is, you know, he came up with a way to benefit everybody as well as himself. And, you know, that in itself is so powerful. And, you know, the fact that he went from a nobody, you know, that, you know, not necessarily wasn't one of the top 50 or, you know, within the top 10 most known guys in the United States. But after this, you know, it said directly at the end that he became, you know, powerful and rich or something along those lines. And, you know, it's not about what you know, it's who you know. And, you know, we as individuals today, we have to start making those connections and start, you know, people like myself who are young and ambitious and, you know, are fired up, you know, every single morning, regardless of the day before, you know, to keep pushing forward, to keep being motivated and to keep your dreams, your desires, your goals, your ambitions alive. Because without those, you know, I found in my life, without goals and ambitions, you have no direct purpose. You have no roadmap at all. And so, you know, this is a perfect illustration. And like Mark said, I'm fired up. I'm ready to get going. Today is going to be a positive, powerful and productive day for everybody on this line. And I can tell you what, if you don't get fired up over this story, you got to check yourself real quick and realize, okay, what's going on? If this story doesn't motivate you, I don't know what will. So with that being said, Paul, I'm going to wrap it up and back to you. I wish everybody.
Thank you, Steven. Really appreciate those comments. And, got to share one little additional line that I heard. I didn't make this up. I got it from somewhere. someone somewhere along the way, but I think it's extremely relevant to what you were talking about. I heard someone say one time, what you know will determine who will want to know you. So it's actually both of them are pretty important. What we know and who we know, both of those pretty important pieces. Appreciate your thoughts. Star 6, who's next? Come on out.
Hey, Paul, this is Frank.
Hey, good morning,
hey,
Frank.
Good morning.
Hello.
I see in this story the power and the importance of building your dreams, because at a time when 600 or 300 million was just a phenomenal amount of money, I mean, everybody believed that, could anybody raise that much money? And now we throw around the numbers of billions like nothing, you know. I mean, companies are sold for billions all the time. But at that time, 600 million was just a phenomenal amount of money. So, but in Schwab's mind, it was a dream that in everybody else's mind really didn't have a possibility of working, because it just couldn't be done, according to them. But Schwab had already conceived it, and he made his dreams come alive by speaking of it, as Mel said, the power of words, and then continuing on his dream of building this U.S. Steel into a huge trust. Legal, but that's another story. But Schwab conceived of it, and we can too. We can conceive of our dreams, and as long as we continue to build on our dreams, and as long as we continue to state our dreams, then we'll be able to conceive of anything we can dream of. It's only the size of the person's dream that it's only the size of the concept. I don't know how to phrase what I'm trying to say, but you could see the difference. But there's two gentlemen that work at a network out there that constantly are talking about the size of their dreams. And when they talk to other people, would like to, you know, get $7,000 a month or $10,000 a month, and they said, well, I want $10,000 a day. You know, so it's just the size of their dream that sounds daunting, but guess what? They're conceiving of it and they're accomplishing it all the time. So it's not about the size of our dream. It's about it's about our conception of it. If we can conceive of it, it can be done, no matter what the circumstances are. So that's all I had to say. Thank you. Back to you, Paul.
Thank you, Frank. Good to hear you, my friend. Appreciate those comments. There
Hello,
was someone.
Paul?
Yeah. Who is that? Go ahead.
This is Rich, San Diego.
Oh, hey, Rich. Good morning.
Good morning. Hey, you know, what I got out of this is he was a man that was among giants, and because he had faith in his idea, because he believed in his idea, he went up on that podium and laid out his plan for U.S. Steel. And so after that, I mean, he became one of the giants. And how many of us have neglected or would not step out when we're among so-called giants, people that have a lot of money, people that have already achieved their dreams, and they won't step out? But on the other hand, how many people have you ever heard of that have stepped out and became what they had always thought in their mind that they wanted to become? And so that's exactly what I got out of this morning, is step out and believe in your dreams so much that you don't care what other people think. You're going to get out there and you're going to achieve that dream through your faith and through your conception of your dream. Always, as you're walking through the day, as you're going through your day, you're going to accomplish that. So that's what I got out of that. I thought it was really powerful. Back to you.
Excellent insight, Rich. Thank you so much for that.
Good morning.
Hey,
good morning. Yeah, actually, there was a lady I think that's been kind of waiting to speak. Who? Let's let her go first.
That's Lisa.
Hey,
Curry,
go ahead, Lisa.
Going?
Good morning.
I actually just wanted to make this pretty brief. I recently, I don't know if anyone has heard of this before, but I recently saw The Men Who Built America. It's coming out on DVD. And as Paul was reading this and as I was reading it, it was just like I was watching the video. And one of the things that is recommended in the book is to study people who have become wealthy. And in the movie of The Men Who Built America, it actually talks about Rockefeller, Vanderbilt, Carnegie. It did talk about Schwab, but actually talked about the transaction between Schwab and J.P. Morgan and all of that. And let me say something. I'm not even a history person, okay? My husband is a history person, and he's the one that got me watching this. And I, as a result, will get him to read Think and Grow Rich because he wants to see the history part. And so I just wanted to say, since it is recommended by Dr. Napoleon Hill, it is a great little mini-series from the History Channel. It's gone off now, but I think you can order it online. It is well worth the whatever, $30 or whatever you have to pay, because it's like it's jumping off of the page. And my desire is for my husband to come from the employee mentality to understanding that rich and wealthy people do think differently. And if I have to get, and then as a result of him reading this book, he will actually see, and it will make a difference in his life. So I'm just pleased as punch. But I just wanted to say, the Think and Grow Rich book, it actually is just that particular part about Carnegie, and just came right out of the pages to me. And also, when they said 600, the other thing I wanted to say is when they said how much it was sold for, when Carnegie said, you know, when Carnegie said, I should have asked for more, you know, and then J.P. Morgan said, you would have gotten it. First of all, they that was big during that time. And in the movie, it talked about how the actual worth of it right now, how it would be worth in the billions now if that same deal were made. And so I often remember that. He said, if you would have asked for more, you would have got it. And just the gentleman right before me said, yeah, we got to think big. Ask for more. You deserve it. And so anyway, I just wanted to make that point. Men in Both America, it's great. You should look at it and ask for more in life. You will certainly get it. If you can believe, you can achieve it. Back to you, Paul.
Lisa, excellent, excellent stuff. Thank
good
you.
Morning,
thank
Paul.
You. Thank you. Good morning. Who's
good morning.
That?
Yeah, good morning. This is Melton McClanahan calling from California. I just wanted to chime in here real quick. There was a passage I read last night that applied to this, and it just made me think of this real quick because these men were not afraid. So the pastor said, if you were not afraid, what would you accomplish or what would you go for? And so when I read that and then I heard this morning, it's like, oh, my goodness, these guys had a plan, had faith, was not afraid, and presented it, and it actually helped and it developed and it happened for them. And so that's something I take back to myself. It's like, man, these gentlemen were not afraid to put together their dreams and put it out there, because if they were afraid, they would have never presented it. So if you were not afraid, what would you accomplish in your life? And so that's what you have to ask yourself as you move into 2013. Thanks, Paul. I appreciate it.
Excellent question. We can all ask ourselves. Really brilliant. Thank you, Mel. Appreciate that. Who's
Paul,
next?
After.
Good morning.
After,
hi.
Young lady. John. After the young lady.
Okay. I think,
hi.
Was that Elise?
No, this is Dorenza. Good morning.
Oh, hey, Dorenza. Good morning.
Yes, I took three things away from this. One is the power of words, what we say, whether we say positive or negative words, the power of words are just awesome. The second thing is that the connection, just relationships are also very, very, we've got to be careful who we connect with and who we have relationships with and who we involve ourselves with, because these gentlemen took the time to, they didn't have like a major meeting. They were at a dinner. They were, you know, just socially gathering, but they made history happen because of the connection and the relationship that they had with one another or that they developed over time. And the third thing is that we've got to have faith. And when we say things, we've got to believe. Belief is a very powerful thing, and we've got to make sure that we have increased faith when we're moving forward with our dreams and our goals. Thank you. Back to you.
Excellent, Dorinza. Thank you so much for that. I've taken notes, all three of those. Thank you. John, go ahead.
Hey, wow. Good morning, Thinking Gruwich family. And an amazing reading today. Just to think that some guy could walk into a room and paint a picture that was so powerful, that it in effect created right off the bat $600 million in value. Now, and like one of the callers said, that this was $600 million back then. Who knows what the equivalent of that money would be today? So the quote that I heard was, "I am by calling a dealer of words." Rudyard Kipling. You know, there is power and there is passion in what it is that you say and what it is that you do, really. But how is it that you develop the facility of language, the facility of being able to communicate effectively? And the way that you do that is by what you read, by what you listen to, and by what you allow yourself to be exposed to. So as we go throughout our day, and one of the things that I do on a personal basis is that I've made a commitment that at a minimum I will read at least 30 minutes per day of a particular subject having to do with my business. Sometimes it's a technical subject. Sometimes it's a sales letter. Like I will literally just read sales letters, things that compel me, things that drive my emotional triggers. So that what ends up happening is that over a period of time, as you are exposed to more and more of these ideas, of these ways of communicating, of ways of convincing, of ways of connecting, your language patterns, the very language that you speak, begins to mimic, it begins to emulate that which you have read. What comes out of you is only a reflection of what goes into you. Just like in the technology industry, garbage in, garbage out. Well, if the only thing that we allow ourselves to ingest on a mental basis is quality information, information which is empowering to us, information which is educating us, that is what we will put out to the world. So that when you need the emotion, when you need the ability to convey your thoughts in a very precise, very effective, very hard-hitting manner, the words that you call upon will be the right ones to get your point across. And that's what I want to say today. Back to you, Paul.
Very powerful. Thank you.
Good morning, Paul. It's Dr. Graham.
Super duper Stan, if you would hit star 6 and come on out, my friend.
Can you hear me, Paul?
I sure can. You sound great.
Well, thank you, and you do too. And I don't know if you came back yesterday or not, because I wasn't able to make the call yesterday, but welcome back to the call.
Thank you.
So good to hear your voice. And this story, the reading that you did today, was absolutely incredible. I see that story has stirred up a lot of talk here, because I've been trying to get in and everyone's coming in, and I love it when I hear that. And I give this call credit for, I'm an artist by profession, so I've always been on the creative plane when it relates to creating art and all that stuff. But I give this call the credit for making me aware of the competitive plane, excuse me, the competitive plane versus the creative plane, in which most people are operating out off of that competitive plane. So that is so important. And everything that has been said so far, I just say ditto. It's just been an incredible conversation. One thing I did wanted to chime in and say, last week when you weren't here, we were talking a lot about desire, belief, and faith and all that stuff, and different ones had different opinions on it. And with the story that we just heard with Schwab and all of that, of course, I would say, of course, he had to have faith. He had to have belief in what he was talking about. But if he did not have desire, if that desire was not there, I mean, he wouldn't have stepped out there to accomplish what he did. And after the conversation last week, I was thinking and thinking and thinking about it, so I formulated a little phrase here that I just wanted to share and leave with the family here. And it simply says, desire and belief run side by side, but it is desire that initially sparks the action for your belief to be manifested. And I just wanted to share that because that's just my heart, how I feel about, because if you can have all you want to have, if that desire is not there, you're not going to step forth and do what you got to do or take the action, I would say, in order to make it come true. So welcome back, Paul. Look forward to hearing you more and more, and you all have a super-duper day there.
Super-duper. Stan, could you share that one more time, please? I didn't get the final part. Desire and belief run side by
side. Desire and belief run side by side, but it is desire that initially sparks the action for your belief to be manifested.
That is powerful. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Super duper Stan. You're an amazing man. Sure appreciate you, my friend. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Back to you.
Star 6, who's next? Come on out.
Good morning, Doc Fran.
Hey, good morning, Doc Fran.
Wow, what a discussion, and it is exciting, and I'm so happy that Stan just spoke. What powerful understanding he brought to the story. And what struck me as I listened to this story this time was how the power of the spoken word. You know, we've all been trained on the fact that the power is in the word, and the fact that the words are the action. And he hit exactly on what struck me this morning, is that Barnes had the courage to speak to this assembly, and his words created an enormous cooperative creativity among these individuals, which by and large had been largely in the competitive thinking mode. And so the parallel that I wanted to bring for all of us on the call here this morning is why it is so important for us to pick up the phone and actually call and talk to people. That is the single action which brings the most results, as you've heard Paul speak to and many other leaders on this call. It is the single action which most of us are reluctant to do at times, but it's only through moving our influence out into the individuals. Now, we may not speak to a room of 80 of the wealthiest men in the country at any one time, but that's not out of the question for all of us, because none of us knows who's in the audience or who's going to be influenced by what you say to the point where they get stimulated into cooperative creativity with you and help you achieve your goals. We're all in our home-based businesses, and this statistic in our industry is amazing. And the reality is that many of the great sustained incomes that you hear about in our industry, which are the inspiration for all of us to continue to labor in it, in many instances, those incomes are predicated on the successful influence of only two or three individuals who align themselves in cooperative creativity with your vision and your intent. And the three or four of you together go on to create this tremendous impact. So, you know, have the courage to speak your vision into existence. And the more times you do that, and the more people you do that with, the odds of you accomplishing that manifestation go right through the stratosphere. Back to you, Paul.
Thank you. Excellent comments, Doc. Really appreciate those. We do have a few minutes left. Star 6, who else would like to come on out? Love to hear from you.
Hey, Paul, it's Lindy.
Hey, Lindy.
Good morning, everybody. Wow, this is just, my wheels are just turning and turning and turning. This is just so incredible. A few of the things, well, just a couple of things. First of all, you know, we've talked so many times about being good storytellers. And reading through this chapter, how Schwab spoke to these people when so many others before him had tried and failed. One of the things that was predominant for me was that one of the men was distrusted. So integrity is crucial. And the other thing was, is it writes in here that his speech was probably full of epigram and threaded with wit. And epigram, I didn't know what that meant, so I looked it up. And what it talks about is a concise poem dealing pointedly and often satirically with a single thought or event, and often ending with an ingenious turn of thought. So that's the paradigm shift, and we talk about that so much on this call, you know, because the more facts that we can consume and live by and have as part of our stream of life, the more it turns our thoughts to our truth. And so the paradigm shift was is something that, because of the way he explained it to them, they saw it in a different light than the people before them. But the magic is being able to tell good stories and communicate that vision or others. So anyway, that's what my thoughts are today. Have a great day, everybody. Back to you, Paul.
Lindy, excellent points. Thank you so much for sharing those with us. Really appreciate it. Star 6, we have a couple of minutes left.
Good morning, Paul.
Neville, good morning, young man. How are you today?
I'm blessed and highly favored, young man. Glad to see you back. See you getting well and getting better every day. God bless. I did see your posting on Facebook that says, Rudyard Kipling said, we are by profession dealer of words. Or I am by profession a dealer of words. And words are so, as we widely said, I think John said again this morning, that words is what bring things into existence. God brought us into existence when he created by to let there be light, and there was light, and then to let there be this, and this was this, and so forth. The only thing that he did not say let there be light as is because he took time to create us definitely first before he blew the breath of life into us. Now, words are what makes things, your belief in yourself, without fear. And that's what took place that evening with that young man. He was being told that was not the place to make the presentation. He was being told that he was just there because of politeness and he should just say something that would maybe they'd be laugh at and go home and feel good about it and come again. But he realized he had an opportunity. He had an opportunity in which to paint a picture, create a vision so that they also could dream. And in using word as a peddler of words, he was able to generate enough energy from his thoughts and his vision to those people that turned into an awesome, awesome opportunity for everyone. So Doc said it also, where you are, when you're there, you don't know what your words are going to do, but when you step out boldly, step out with a burning desire, hot burning desire, as John would say, and be right thinking, there's no way you will know what the result's going to be, but you can expect it to be positive. Back to you, Paul. Welcome back. God bless everyone.
Thank you, Neville, and thank you, everyone, on the call today. I'll tell you, this has been a great call. I'm really excited about the comments that have been shared and excited about the self-discovery that's happening in my life as we go through this material and we mastermind together. And I hope everyone is kind of feeling the same way. This is a journey of self-discovery because at different times in our lives, our desire will be a little bit higher. Our desire will be a little bit lower. At different times in our lives, our vision of what we want will be a little bit clearer. As sometimes it might be a little bit more murky. At different times in our lives, our belief might be a little bit higher, might be a little bit lower. And through participating in this call, I'll tell you, it's a real journey of self-discovery for me. It helps me tremendously. That's why I'm here every day. And I'm so grateful to be on this journey with people like you who love life, who are excited about learning and growing and helping one another. Thank you, thank you, thank you for being who you are. Let's get out there today and take advantage of the time we have. Let's move forward with a clearer vision. Let's build our desire. Let's take action. Let's have courage. And let's go out there and be a positive effect in the world around us. Love each of you. Have a great day. And we'll see you back here tomorrow morning on the Think and Grow Rich call. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye for now.